Mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.
From the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's primary day in Pennsylvania. In addition to the presidential primary race and key state office races, folks in the 139th district will be participating in a special election to fill the vacant seat. We'll have details from Jocelyn Kramer, Wayne County Commissioner and Chair of the Local Board of Elections. Moving Toward Health's Maggie Fitzpatrick is here with her latest column from the Sullivan County Democrat. And Saturday is Independent Booksellers Day. We'll speak to a local author and illustrator who's celebrating at Ratty Books. Contributor Tracy Gates speaks to Dave Covo. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Kristen Wright. A hearing is underway in New York on day two of Donald Trump's criminal trial. Before witness testimony continues in the hush money case, the judge is hearing arguments to decide if Trump violated the gag order the judge issued. On his way into court, the former president stopped and spoke to reporters. He condemned student protests happening at college campuses over the war in Gaza, calling the protests a disgrace. On Capitol Hill, the Senate is slated to take up a $95 billion foreign aid package passed by the House. NPR's Deirdre Walsh says President Biden is expected to sign it if it gets final approval.
The Senate is going to start procedural votes to move this bill, and it could have a final vote to get it through and to the president's desk as soon as today. One thing that's changed since the Senate voted on this last time is increasing calls from some Democrats to condition aid to Israel. So that's something that we're going to be watching. There is $9 billion in humanitarian aid for Gaza in this bill.
The aid package includes $26 billion for Israel, roughly $60 billion for Ukraine, and $8 billion for Taiwan. Alameda County, California, is reviewing its death penalty convictions. From member station KQED, Annalise Finney has details.
The review comes at the direction of federal judge Vince Chabria, who called recently discovered prosecutors' notes singling out Black and Jewish prospective jurors, quote, strong evidence of prosecutorial misconduct. District Attorney Pamela Price says the jury selection review will begin with death penalty cases, but could broaden.
The evidence that we have uncovered suggests plainly that many people did not receive a fair trial in Alameda County.
There are 460 people on California's death row.
Stocks opened higher this morning as the Supreme Court weighs arguments over Starbucks labor practices. NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
The High Court is reviewing a case in which lower courts ordered Starbucks to rehire seven workers who were fired after trying to unionize their coffee shop in Memphis. Workers at more than 400 Starbucks stores have voted to unionize, but not a single one has reached a collective bargaining agreement with the company. Stock in General Motors is up after the automaker reported better-than-expected profits for the most recent quarter. GM's getting a boost from strong sales of its high-priced pickup trucks. Pepsi beat sales forecasts for the most recent quarter thanks to strong demand in Asia and Europe. Pepsi's North American sales suffered from a recall in its Quaker Oats division. Pepsi continues to raise prices around the world, though not as rapidly as it did last year. Scott Horsley, NPR News.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 170 points in early trading. The United Methodist Church opens its general conference today in Charlotte, North Carolina. You are listening to NPR News from Washington. The federal government is unveiling a new tool to help people stay safe during dangerous heat this summer. NPR's Alejandra Barunda reports.
Your local weather forecast this summer will probably include a new metric called heat risk. It factors in considerations beyond temperature that make heat dangerous, including humidity and the time of year. A 90-degree day in April, for example, is more dangerous than one in July because people's bodies haven't yet adjusted to heat. Risk can also differ based on where someone lives.
90 degrees in Miami is not the same as 90 degrees in Portland, Maine.
That's Mandy Cohen. She's the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. A heat risk score of 2 or orange signals risk for people sensitive to heat, like children or people on particular medications. 4, magenta, means it's really dangerous for everyone. Alejandra Barunda, NPR News.
The city of Baltimore is suing the owner and manager of the container ship that struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge last month. The lawsuit, filed in federal court, claims the owner of the Dolly was negligent and that the vessel was not fit for voyage. The city also accuses the crew of incompetence. The bridge collapse killed six construction workers. Federal investigators, including the FBI, are looking into what happened. A third shipping channel at the port has now reopened. Clothing retailer Express has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. The Columbus, Ohio-based company says it's planning to close 95 stores. The longtime mainstay at American malls has been losing shoppers and money. The company says it has received a bid to be acquired by a consortium. I'm Kristen Wright, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Monrovia, growing plants for nearly 100 years. Monrovia grows a diverse selection of shrubs, trees, perennials, and more for different climate and landscape needs, from hydrangeas to lavenders. Monrovia.com.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's primary day in Pennsylvania. Polls are open until 8 o'clock. Democrats and Republicans are heading to polls to select candidates for president, U.S. House, and Senate. Pennsylvania's three row offices, attorney general, auditor general, and treasurer, and state House and Senate seats. The winners will face each other during the November 5th general election. In addition, the 139th Pennsylvania Legislative District, which includes Wayne and Pike counties, hosts a special election today to fill the seat left vacant by State Representative Joseph Adams, who resigned in early February. Radio Catskill's Jason Dole spoke to Wayne County Commissioner Jocelyn Kramer, who also chairs the Wayne County Board of Elections, about today's primary and that special election.
The best way to think about it is that there's actually two elections happening. Let me start with the one we are most familiar with, which is our basic primary election. And in the primary, the two major political parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, they select their candidates to go on to the general election in the fall. And there's a lot of races, of course. Some of them are more, are going to be more exciting than others just based on who's involved. But it's the presidential primary. We've got a U.S. senator on the ballot, attorney general, auditor general, state treasurer, representatives, et cetera. So please, please, please participate in the election. Tomorrow you can participate by showing up at your poll location. A lot of people, the mail-in ballot option is getting real popular. A lot more people are participating by mail. If you have requested a mail-in ballot and you haven't completed it, it must be received in our office in the secrecy envelope. It must be signed and dated, and it must be received by 8 p.m. on election night, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. So you can drop it off right here in the courthouse. You can drop it off in our elections office, which will be open tomorrow night until 8 p.m. And if you've mailed it and if you're not sure it's been received, you can certainly call our elections office to confirm. If you are participating in person, you can go to your polling location and you can participate in the primary. So there is a special election also happening, and I want to talk about that for a second. So many of you are familiar with Joe Adams. He was actually a Wayne County commissioner, and I worked with him for several years before he ran for the 139th seat. When earlier this year, Joe did make an announcement that he would not be seeking reelection. So that district is on the ballot in the primary for next year. However, shortly after that, he also announced that he would be stepping down effective essentially immediately because there was a medical issue in his family that sort of took priority. What that means is there's now a vacancy for his position for now, from now till the remainder of the year. So anyone that lives in the 139th district, which are municipalities from both Wayne and Pike County, most of them are it's the southernmost part of Wayne County. Jason, it also includes Cherry Ridge and South Canaan, which typically you don't think of as southern Wayne County. But that and several municipalities in Pike make up that 139th district. If you live in that district, you can vote in this special election. You do not have to be a Republican or a Democrat. And I really appreciate you giving me a few minutes to get the word out, because anyone who isn't registered with the major parties isn't in the habit of participating in elections in the springtime, right, when it's primaries for the major parties.
Yeah, that's one of the key things that I wanted to emphasize with you today, or have you emphasize for the listeners. So how do third-party independents and other voters participate in this special election?
So if you show up at the polls, show up at your polling location, when you sign in, they'll know that you are either unaffiliated or independent or whatever, and give you a special election ballot. If you live in that district and you're also a Republican or a Democrat, you're going to get the primary ballot as well. But when we say, I try not to use the term third party, Jason, because in Wayne County, there are actually quite a few parties, and nationally, there's a bunch of parties. You know, we're familiar with some of them, the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, the Independent Party. But you can be unaffiliated, undecided. It doesn't matter. And if you live in the 139th, you can vote for this race. So I really do encourage people to, if they haven't requested a mail-in ballot or participated by mail, to go to their polling location. The other good bit of information that I want to share with you guys is that the state website, and we have links to it on our own county page, the state website offers an awful lot of great information on where your polling location is, hours, things like that. If you're not sure if you're registered, and people do switch parties from time to time, and sometimes they forget if they are where they want to be. You can learn all of that on the state site, vote.pa.gov. I think it's very helpful information. We are past the deadline to register to vote in this primary. But if anyone is interested in this year's election in the fall, please do register if you haven't already. Do it now while you're thinking of it so the clock doesn't run out on you in the fall. It is a presidential year. Our turnout percentages tend to be higher than in other years where there are local elections, which always surprises me, because I think sometimes the local elections actually impact you on a more profound level. But again, it's never been more convenient to vote with the mail-in ballot option. But if you haven't done that yet, you can show up at your polling location. And I really encourage people to participate, because I always feel like the process is better the more people that participate.
And if you could, and I know you just explained this, but if you could, just to remind us again, who actually, if I were, which I am not because I don't live in Pennsylvania and I don't live in the 139th, but if I was a voter in the 139th and I go in to vote in the special election, who am I seeing on that ballot?
Okay. So prior to the special election, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party chose their candidates, and the Republican Party has chosen Jeff Olsemer to be on the ballot for the special election, and the Democratic Party has chosen Robin Schooley Skibber to be on the ballot. So those are the two choices that you have for the special election to fill the 139th seat for the remainder of the year. Now, are you ready to get more confusing, Jason?
Yeah, this is the part I've been waiting for. I think I know where you're going with this.
So on the primary ballot for our registered Republicans and Democrats, that same race is on the ballot for next year when the new term begins. So again, there's essentially two races for that seat, one to fill the term for the remainder of the year and then for the two-year term beginning next year.
Right. And again, that just kind of underlines the key word in all of this, which is special. This is a special election to fill a seat until the regular election happens. And it really reminds me of something that we just went through on the New York side of the river in our listening area just 2 years ago with one of our local congressional districts. It was the same thing where we were seeing similar candidates in two different races at the same time. That's why I just wanted to talk to you and get you to drag a comb through this. So whoever wins a special election, They will fill this seat until the next legislative term starts in January, correct?
Correct. That's correct. So, and again, that'll be determined in the general election. We always call the fall election the general election. The spring elections are the primary, where the candidates, where the parties select their candidates. So the general election in the fall will determine who gets that seat for the next two-year term. And these representatives, just from my own personal experience, Jason, our senators, our representatives, and our federal senators and congresspeople work really, we're in touch with them constantly at the county level. There's so much that they can do for local government in terms of supporting economic development projects, letters of support for things, and more importantly, a lot more importantly, funding for this. I know everybody thinks about politics not in a great way these days, right? Things are divisive. But when the legislators are extremely helpful to us here at the local level, and so you want really good people in there. You want people that will serve their communities. You want people with great reputations and great characters. And so we control that as voters. That's why I think greater participation really strengthens the democratic process so that we do get the best participation, gets the best outcome, right? So I really do encourage people to participate. And any questions at all, you can always reach out to us here in the county, because if you have anything, any questions at all, your elections are run by county government in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And here in Wayne County, I've been the chair of the Board of Elections ever since I was elected 4 years ago. And I think we do things extremely well here. But we are very happy to answer questions. We're very happy to help people through the process, answer questions they have or concerns that they have. And we're here every day to do that for the residents of Wayne County.
Is there anything else on this ballot that people should know about other than what we've already gone over?
So for those who are not registered Republicans or Democrats, no. The only thing that will be on the ballot is the 139th race in those municipalities. For the primary election, Jason, yes, all the other, the president, the United States senator, attorney general, auditor general, state treasurer, we've got the congressional 8th district, we've got the 11th district. For those that don't live in Pennsylvania, I'm sorry, Wayne County has two different districts, the 139th, which we've been talking about. The northern part of the county has the 111th district. That'll be on the primary ballot as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of other races. There's some party races, right? The Republicans and Democrats are both looking for delegates. Those will be on the ballots for the Republican and Democrats voting. So, I learn something every single time I've voted throughout my life. So please participate. Go. The poll workers there often have been there for years and years, Jason. I think they do things extremely well. But we're always encouraged if we get a greater participation and hope to see people go out.
We've talked a lot about the special election and primary that are happening. But, you know, as you said, you're involved with running the election. It's a big election year. Is there anything that you want folks to know about the general election? Anything else that you're looking at that you're working on that you want to let folks know about?
Jason, I appreciate you giving me a chance to just talk a little bit about the mail-in ballot process. The mail-in ballot option has become extremely popular, and I'm grateful. You know, my mother is 88 years old, and, you know, when we're younger, it's very easy to get up and go on any given day. At her age, you know, I'm happy that there's a mail-in ballot option for her and a lot of people where it is harder for them to get out. So it's really becoming very popular by both parties, Republican candidates, Democrat candidates. They're all encouraging people to participate. And I just want to speak briefly about, you know, people have asked me, there's already an absentee ballot process. Why is there a mail-in, a no-excuse, essentially, mail-in ballot option as well? That was due to legislation that passed in 2019 to make it easier for people, right? When you request an absentee ballot, there's a little more involved in doing it. So, legislatively, it was decided, let's let people vote. Let's make this easy. when they return a mail-in ballot, I really ask people to just spend some time with it and do it properly, because if the ballot that you return to us is not signed, your signature and the date that you're returning it to us, if that's not there, we can't count that ballot. So there have been some changes. If anybody's requested a mail-in ballot before, I hope you'll find that it's easier to decipher. It's even color-coded. And all of that is to secure make sure that people who are eligible to vote are voting, make sure people who are not eligible to vote are not voting. And then the secrecy envelope, it's really important that the ballot goes into that secrecy envelope before returning it to the courthouse. So that's really it. It's very simple. It just means reading it and following it correctly. Very few ballots weren't done properly as of last year. I think people are getting better and better at this. But, you know, you just hate to see one return that you can't count, Jason. It kills us here, right? I encourage people to, again, it's a very popular option these days. We've made it more convenient. And if you do it that way, just take a minute, be careful, read through the instructions carefully, and send it back to us so that your voice is counted. And that matters to us. That matters a great deal.
All right. And we've been talking to you in your capacity as Wayne County's Board of Elections president, but as Wayne County Commissioner, and under that hat, apart from the elections, is there anything going on that the commissioners want listeners to know while we happen to have you here?
I appreciate it, Jason. So we're always working on a few projects, economic development projects. You've heard me talk about some of these. A recovery to work ecosystem where drug and alcohol and behavioral health services are combined to help give people their very best chance of recovery. That process continues. We have secured funding for it. Instead of all located on one campus, just because of logistics and financial limitations, we are now forced to look at this happening in separate locations, which is okay. We can pivot. We can make that work. But we're gaining traction on that project. And as commissioners, you know, we're mandated to provide services to the people of Wayne County. And when those service providers aren't in the area or it's unaffordable or unattainable, we have to play a role in making it easier for people to receive those services. The other project, we've talked about this a lot, I think, Jason, in broadband. So we're actually expecting an announcement from the Commonwealth sometime this month about a project that we had submitted about 6 months ago that will move broadband forward in Wayne County significantly. And even before we hear about that or get the funding from that, there's been a lot of activity in the county from the private sector. Individual companies are making an investment in Wayne County in fiber right to the home in a lot of cases, and still some wireless options. And their businesses have been really, they're amazing. I'm so pleased that they're moving forward and helping Wayne County. That's happened even outside of the county.
Yeah, is that the result of any kind of like government incentive or encouragement? Or is it the private sector just realizing, hey, there's a market in rural areas?
That's exactly what it is. And before other bigger players come into the area and scoop it up, it's a different business model for each of them. But my understanding is they want a footprint here in Wayne County to expand where they're already serving. In some cases, it's your area, Sullivan County, or coming into Wayne County from the north or across the Delaware River. But they want to get a footprint in here and a hold of before another big outside provider comes in. Either way, the Wayne County residents benefit from that. So the state funding, that money, Jason, is designed to really help the people that don't have broadband at all. So outside of this private development, wherever there is not service yet, hopefully that money gets us to the finish line. But it's been a long process for me, Jason. I've learned a lot about funding for these projects since I've been a commissioner, and I'm frustrated it's taken a long time, but I understand why it has. And hopefully the actual development work, once we get the green light and funding, that's a less amount of time to finish something than to get the funding for it sometimes.
We've been talking with Wayne County Commissioner Jocelyn Kramer, who's also the Board of Elections President in Wayne County. Jocelyn, thank you so much for going through all of this. And then also, best of luck on the special election primary day.
Hi, thank you very much, Jason. Please remember to vote, and please remember to support WJFF, guys.
And again, it's primary day in Pennsylvania. Polls are open until 8 p.m. You can find out more information about polling sites at waynecountypa.gov. Also, on our website, you can click on the Vote 411 graphic to get more election information, including information about the general election and your own registration. And you can also listen to our election coverage so far. It's at wjffradio.org. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Congressman Mark Molinaro and all House Republicans from New York on Monday called on Columbia University's president to resign amid pro-Palestinian protests on campus that have led to mounting criticism of the university's leadership from all sides. We'll have more right after this. This is Radio Chatskill. Hi, I'm Tim Bruno, General Manager of Radio Catskill. Thanks to everyone for springing into action during our spring fun drive to help us meet our goal. We made it, thanks to you. We couldn't do it without you, and we appreciate your support for public radio for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. Thank you again for making our public radio station available to all. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. More than 100 pro-Palestinian demonstrators who had camped out on Columbia University's Green in Manhattan were arrested last week, and similar encampments have sprouted up at universities around the country as schools struggle with where to draw the line between allowing free expression while maintaining safe and inclusive campuses. New York's Republican delegation in Congress, including Mark Molinaro from New York's 19th district in our listening area, signed a letter yesterday calling for the president of Columbia University to resign. From the New York Public News Network, North Country Public Radio's Emily Russell reports that Congressman Elise Stefanik is leading the push to oust Columbia's president.
Since the war began back in October, students on college campuses around the U.S. have held both pro-Palestine and pro-Israel demonstrations. Also during that time, the Anti-Defamation League reported a 360% increase in anti-Semitic incidents in the U.S. In November, Columbia University in New York City established a task force to combat anti-Semitism. And then last week, students began to gather on campus in a pro-Palestinian demonstration. The university's president and members of its board testified in front of Congress last week. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik led that questioning. She pushed Columbia's president, Manoush Shafiq, about her prior testimony that the protests on campus weren't anti-Jewish.
Dr. Shafiq, you realize that at some of these events, the slurs and the chants have been F the Jews, death to Jews, yep. F Israel, no safe place, death to the Zionist state, Jews out. You don't think those are anti-Jewish?
Completely anti-Jewish. Completely unacceptable.
So you changed your testimony on that issue as well? So there have been anti-Jewish protests.
I didn't get to finish my sentence. So what I was going to say was there were protests that were called that were...
That's not what you were asked. You were asked, were there any anti-Jewish protests? And you said no.
So the protest was not labeled as an anti-Jewish protest.
I'm not asking what it was labeled.
Anti-Israeli government policy.
The question wasn't what it was labeled.
But anti-Semitic incidents happen, or anti-Semitic things were said.
As tensions heightened on Columbia's campus last week, the NYPD intervened, arresting more than 100 protesters on Thursday. Yesterday, President Shafiq moved all classes online. Governor Kathy Hochul visited the campus and said she spoke both with students and staff about the freedom of speech and about campus safety for all. Here she is in a video posted to X, formerly known as Twitter.
Students are scared. They're afraid to walk on campus. They don't deserve that. They deserve to be in an environment that is free from discrimination as required by state human rights laws.
New York's Republican delegation in Congress, led by Stefanik, published a letter on Monday calling for Columbia's president to resign. Stefanik led a similar push back in December after questioning the presidents of Harvard, UPenn, and MIT about anti-Semitism on college campuses. Just days after that questioning, the president of UPenn resigned. Stefanik tweeted, quote, one down, two to go, referring to the college president's resignation. Less than a month later, Harvard's president resigned. According to the Associated Press, there are pro-Palestinian encampments on other college campuses around the country right now, including at NYU, MIT, Yale, and the University of Michigan. I'm Emily Russell for the New York Public News Network.
We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, Maggie Fitzpatrick is moving toward health. She is the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat, and she's here with her latest column, Building Foundational Food Habits. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. Every Friday night, it's my goal to bring WJFF listeners great music. Music from all over the world. Stuff that's been lost in the archives and needs to be heard. Classics you already knew you loved. And new stuff from established and emerging artists. All right here on The Mixtape, WJFF Radio Catskill.
Friday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Maggie Fitzpatrick is the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat. Her column is Moving Toward Health. It's out today in today's edition and also online. Maggie's joining us today, as she does every Tuesday, and we're going to talk about today's column, Building Foundational Food Habits.
Good morning.
Good morning. You were telling me a little bit about what prompted you to write this article. You were with your mom?
Yeah, this past weekend, my mom and I went down to Virginia Beach to visit one of my cousins who lives there. And we were on our drive home and she was driving. And I was like, you know what? I need to write my article before I get home and it's too late. So yeah, I was just going through, you know, recent articles and figuring out what I haven't written about in a while. And this concept of going really back to the basics when it comes to food is something that I feel like we haven't talked about in a little while. So I wanted to share some tips about that that can really work for anyone, regardless of what your preferred way of eating is.
Right. And you talk about how, you know, it's instead of looking at what you can remove from your diet, what you can add in when it comes to food habits. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, this is such a foundational mindset shift that really will change everything for you when it comes to food. So our first thought when it comes to I need to eat healthier or like quote unquote diet is what do I cut out, right? What do I stop eating? And this really creates a cycle of restriction and then usually overeating that thing at another time, right? Whether it's when you allow yourself to have it again or when your willpower is at its weakest and you're really tired or something like that, right? So if we can switch the way that we think about it, instead of thinking about what do I have to cut out of my diet, if we can think about what can I add to what I'm eating right now, then we'll be focusing on the positive side of it. We'll be focusing on what we get to do. We'll be focusing on how it's going to be better instead of how it's going to be worse and the struggle and, you know, all of the negative things that come along with removing foods right from your diet.
And you're focusing on whole foods, foods that are not processed or minimally processed. You know, there was an article that came out or a study that came out last month from the British Medical Journal that found people who consume high amounts of ultra-processed foods are getting sick. The increased risk of anxiety, depression, obesity, certain cancers. And the interesting thing about this study is that the data came from more than 9 million people who participated in the study. So
that's a lot of people.
There's some good evidence there about avoiding processed foods, maybe.
Yeah, definitely sample size is qualified for that one. But yeah, so processed foods, there's a lot of extra things that get added into the food when it gets processed. And a lot of the nutrients also get stripped out, right? So if we can eat foods that are as whole as possible, right? I like to use an example of an apple because it's just easy to visualize. But a whole apple is a whole food, right? Yeah. Then if you make it into apple sauce, it's like processed, but it's still kind of an apple, right? However, your body's not going to absorb the fiber as much and the nutrients, right? Because it's not in that whole food state. But then if you go to apple juice, we don't look anything like an apple anymore, right? We've basically just pulled sugar out of this food. And that's an easy way to see like a processing progression. And so we want to stick to that whole side as much as possible.
You know, I think that some people forget that when you think about something like a whole fruit or vegetable, that then it's something else. And you mentioned apple to applesauce. You're like, oh, applesauce is good for me. Well, maybe, but it's still processed in a certain way.
Exactly.
It's not exactly an individually wrapped cheese slice, but
yeah,
or cheese product or whatever it's called, but yeah, it's still processed.
And the thing you have to look out for in processed foods as well. Now, I want everyone to go to the store and look at all the applesauce. Apples are made of carbohydrates, right? Which is sugar. Carbohydrates are sugar, and that's fine. Like we need to eat carbohydrates. And when you make applesauce, a lot of times if you look at the packaging, they're adding sugar mm-hmm. to your sugar, right? So why do I want sugar with my sugar, which is the apples? And then if you go to apple juice, there's even more sugar in there, right? So when you're getting that processed food, we have to look at, okay, what is being taken away from this whole food and what are they adding to it, right? To make it either more addictive or whatever, which is then leading to what you were talking about as to why people are getting sick, because this is not the food in the way that we're supposed to be eating it. So anyway, we want to try to eat as many whole foods as possible. And even just one swap per meal will make a big difference, right? Just one food per meal. We don't have to overhaul everything all at once. We can just look at what's on my plate. How can I maybe switch one of these things out at a time?
Yeah. And the simple steps, which you've always mentioned in your column. And when you talk to us, it's about these simple steps that you can take to do that. What else do you want folks to know before we go about building this healthier or better relationship with food?
Yeah. The other thing that I talk about is once we have an idea of the whole foods and we start to make that progress, the other thing we want to start to add in is balance on our plate. Right. So we want to make sure we're not just eating one macronutrient, fat, protein, or carbohydrates. A lot of times we're really high on carbs or fat and not so high on protein, right? We want to find that balance, and that balance is going to help you feel more energized throughout the day. It's going to prevent some of those crashes we feel after eating, and it's going to make you feel better in general while also helping you achieve whatever your health goals are. So that's really another great way to just look at, you know, how can I add some more things in?
I had an avocado on some farmer's market bread today, so I felt like I was making a good step.
That's nice. Do you know what the macronutrients are in those? What are they mostly made out of?
No.
So your bread is mostly carbohydrates, right?
Right.
And your avocado is mostly fat.
Yes.
Yeah,
but
so that's
fat,
a good balance.
Right?
Yeah,
okay.
It's a great fat.
Okay, good.
And then so if you want to add a little protein in there, maybe an egg or something, you know, you have okay. a nice balanced meal.
All right, great.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel better.
Yeah.
Maggie Fitzpatrick is the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat. Her column is Moving Toward Health. The latest column is on the newsstands now or at scdemocratonline.com. Thank you, Maggie.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break, and then when we come back, celebrating Independent Bookseller Day, which is Saturday, with local book author and illustrator Dave Koval. This is Radio Chatskill.
Former President Trump is in real legal trouble, facing multiple serious criminal charges, all while he runs for president again. I'm Scott Detrow. Each week on All Things Considered, we dive into the latest courtroom drama and consider the stakes for American democracy. Catch up with us every Saturday or listen to the Trump's Trials podcast from NPR. And stay with this NPR station for breaking updates and analysis.
Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, independent grassroots global news. Our reporting includes breaking daily news headlines and in-depth interviews with people on the front lines of the world's most pressing issues. People speaking for themselves, providing unique and sometimes provocative perspectives on global events. Democracy Now!, weekdays at noon, right here on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Saturday is Independent Bookseller Day, and Dave Koval, the picture book author and illustrator from Delhi, is hosting a book reading at Ratty Books in Jeffersonville. Here to talk about it some more is contributor Tracy Gates and Dave Koval.
Well, hello.
Hi. Welcome, guys.
Yes, I'm Tracy, and for those of you who haven't heard me before, I work at the Liberty Public Library. But in my earlier career life, I was a picture book editor, or actually I was a children's book editor, and I edited mostly picture books probably in the past like 15 or so years. And one of my favorite author illustrators that I'd say I'd ever worked with is David Koval, and he lives up in Delhi.
Oh, my Lord.
Hi, David.
Hi, Tracy. How are you?
I'm great. So he's got a book coming out. What number picture book is this for you, David?
This is, I guess, number four.
And I think I have all four here. And the title?
The title of the new book?
Yes.
Is called Gather Round.
Yes. And I went up to David's book launch party up in Delhi a couple weeks ago. So a book launch is when a book first comes out. We, of course, have to publishing people and authors and illustrators have to have a party. And this probably was one of the best parties that I'd been to a book launch. You want to describe it just a little bit?
It was really fun. The Gather Round is about being around a campfire. So we invited the whole community to Stony Creek Farm. Kate has a farm up there, and it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. If you're ever up in that area, check it out. And also, I have a couple friends who are fantastic chefs, and we cooked pizza and potatoes and beet soup around the campfire, and a whole collection of families came, and we read the book, and we sang a new song that my good friend Julian Fleischer wrote for the book.
Yeah,
it was more than I could ever ask for. A perfect, glorious evening.
Yeah. Well, just to clarify, this is a picture book. And I thought I would go a little bit. Well, the reason why we're talking is both to celebrate the publication of Gather Round, also Independent Bookseller Day on Saturday, where David will be at Ratty Books. I'm super excited. It's actually in my hometown or the town that I live in now, my adopted town, Jeffersonville, New York, at Ratty Books at 10. But we thought we would talk a little bit about, because I was David's editor for many years, and now I'm his good friend, which I feel fortunate to be. But I thought we would talk a little bit about what it's like to actually create a picture book, because I think a lot of people know picture books from their childhood, from reading to their kids or their grandkids, or their nieces and nephews, in my case. But they don't know what goes into making a picture book. And because I was a picture book editor and you were a picture book author, illustrator. So let's get into that a little bit. I think it'd be interesting to know, at least I hope for some people out there, what that author illustrator relationship is like. And for us, it started, I was thinking about just about 10 years ago. Do you think that's correct?
When we first met. Yeah, probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Around there.
Yeah. And I remember, so I was an editor at Viking Children's Books at the time at part of Penguin Random House. And I remember when you first came in, I just remember thinking, oh, this could be a really fun person to work with.
Oh.
And you came in with
little did you know.
Not true. You came in with your agent. Who was your agent at the time?
It's Michelle Mortimer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great. And this is sometimes how picture book or editors meet an author illustrator. And you came in with the first picture book called Rat and Roach. You want to give a little quick what that's about?
Sure. At the time when I was working on Rat and Roach, I lived in the East Village on 11th and A. Love the East Village there. And I was, working my day job as a graphic designer, branding dude. But I've always sort of loved children's books. I sort of grew up with them, I guess, in a way. My mom was a kindergarten teacher, and I kind of grew up in the theater, learned a lot about storytelling there. And so in the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh, I really would love to work on some children's book. And I had done some earlier, lots of different drafts, as you do when you're trying to get into it. In fact, I'm going to remind you of this story. Mm-hmm. I had written a book about ice fishing way back when. Mm-hmm. And actually, the first time we met was actually through a letter. Because I pitched the book to you, like, way in the 90s, I think. And you wrote a really nice letter back saying, oh, lovely illustrations. It's kind of overwritten. But then, like, flash forward to, you know, when we met with Rat and Roach. Mm-hmm. The book is about a classic odd couple that live under the sewers and at 11th Street.
As one does.
As one does. Yes. Rat is, you know, very messy. He's a drummer in a band. And Roach is a food critic for the New York Times. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're best friends. But, you know, as best friends do, they sort of fight and quabble and and make up in the end.
Yeah. You know? I remember just, it reminded me, of The Odd Couple and of Bert and Ernie, Sesame Street. But I just fell in love with these characters. But as I think the difference between your first two, or at least your very first book, and I think this is often true of, or sometimes true of, first books that an author, an illustrator, in your case, really fine tunes that book before they submit it and works with their agent to like get it to a certain point and maybe their friends and family. So I seem to remember with your first book that I did very little as an editor on that. Do you remember anything?
Actually,
about that
is true. I think, you know, to pitch a first book and really want to get in the door, and maybe sort of over deliver a little bit. And the book, the book was basically, I don't want to say done, but I even went to the effort of like designing end pages. You know, I mean, I figured I'd done all the research. Like, how many pages does it need to be? Like, how does it work? Yeah. What's a page turn sort of feel like? And so, I fully comped up an entire book with all the words and all the pictures. Mm-hmm. Of course, they got refined as we went, but it felt like a pretty complete book because I wanted to make sure, you know, I mean, take it seriously, you know, that kind of feeling.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I definitely was impressed by that and also by you. And we followed that up, or you followed that up with another Rat and Roach book. And then what happened with your third book?
Oh, well, so now we talk about the business a little bit.
Yes, exactly.
So we went in with like a three-book contract. I think Rat and Roach was intended to be a trilogy.
Okay.
I'd forgotten that, actually. Yes, it's true. and it was going to be the next big... I remember someone in the hallway was like, are you ready? You're going to be the next Stinky Cheese Man. And I'm like, okay. It didn't end up that way. But
you should have said these were rats.
Rat and Roach, you know? But, you know, as it goes, as the market goes, and you know, it's a little hard to sell maybe a book about roaches and rats to... librarians, maybe they are, you know, families, but I think by the second book we realized this is not really getting some traction. Mm-hmm. And I was actually right halfway through doing Rat and Roach Get Lost, the third book. Mm-hmm. And I think we had a chat and you were like, maybe we should pivot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we did.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I remember that's always tough for an editor and an author to have that conversation. But hey, it really ended up pivoting in a great direction. So your third book ended up being this book called Run Wild. It ended up winning a New York Times Best Illustrated, which is huge, but very, very different than Rat and Roach, both artistically. You did the illustrations or the artwork, I'd say fine artwork for it, and a very different feel. Where did this is a picture book we're talking about, so about 32 pages in all. Where did it come from? do you remember?
It comes from, I think, growing up in Maine. I grew up sort of outdoors, in the woods, in the mud, in the muck and mire. And I, actually, before I want to backtrack and just tell you how that experience went, sort of pivoting, because I remember you did such a kind thing. You were, we were trying to figure out what a next book would be, and you were like, "Why don't you just come in with some germs of ideas? Just jot it down." And I came in with a number of them, and one of them was just an image of barefoot in the mud, and you're like, "Hey, let's work on this." You know, so it started, that germ sort of started there. And I thank you for that, for sort of like, just let's just take a step back and
I totally forgotten about that.
It was great. But yeah, it's a core memory for me for to be outside, and also I think at the point of my life I was honestly leaving my day job, the sort of the big, I was running a big branding office. And I was totally burned out, and I just wanted to sort of take a step back. And it was a way to sort of get away from that whole computer life, away from the stress of managing that kind of thing, and get back to that sort of core feeling that you had when you were a kid, which is like total freedom for a day and for like just get out there.
I do remember too. I mean, I am not surprised that I reacted to that sketch that you mentioned about the bare feet and so forth, because I think we realize that we have this love of the outdoors and being outdoors in common, which, hey, it was Earth Day yesterday, so it's a perfect book for
Tracy,
that.
By the way, is an amazing mountain biker. You're always like, your trips are amazing. You're everywhere.
I do wear shoes, though. I don't go barefoot. But I, I think I really, as soon as I saw that idea, I just thought you've got to literally run with it. And it ended up being beautiful. Do you want, let's read just a couple pages of Run Wild, and then we'll get into, a little bit into the deep and dirty of Gather Around.
Okay. Yeah.
Before we finish up.
Sure.
This is from,
should I start at the beginning?
Yeah. Yeah. Just a few pages there. This is from Run Wild by David Koval.
Hey, you. Sky's blue. Forget your shoes. Open that door and sprout. You're out. Chase the wind. Can you grab it? Go ahead. Race a rabbit. Crunch, crack, twig, snap. Squeaky clean? Who cares about that? Squish, squirm, fiddlehead fern. Meet a beetle. Talk to worms. Run, run. Wild, wild, all day long, the sun's going to smile.
That's so great. It's one of those things that I just love to hear again and again. And it's like poetry, but it's, you know, in the form of a picture book. So, and there's just a few words per page. And, you know, it's hard to describe artwork on the air, but that way. But fortunately, I think Ratty Books also carries this. So. On Saturday. So let's pivot. Speaking of pivoting, let's pivot to Gather Around and how it came to be. Can you describe a little bit about how you got the idea for it? And let me just describe quickly describe the cover for us, because it's so beautiful.
Well, it is a close up of, I guess, of a campfire, surrounded by fireflies and the sparks that sort of fly up into the sky. S'mores, of course, and a small little ant looking on in the moonlight.
And that ant is throughout the book, which you're really, I love how you do that sort of thing.
How did it come to be? I guess this is, you know, drafting off of, you know, my childhood outdoors, certainly being around a campfire was something that I did often. I remember my dad teaching me how to build one. And it's such an amazing feeling. I don't think there's anyone in the world that would not say it is a magical sort of feeling to be surrounded by a campfire. And I think I remember we might have talked about the campfire book early on, where I wanted to sort of say I wanted to teach kids how to make fire. And we're like, can we do that?
I know.
I don't know. Wait. but, you know, there's so many books out there about, you know, be careful of fire. You know, it's always a warning. But I'm sort of the mind to sort of have kids really enjoy the outdoors and to be knowledgeable about it. So, I mean, that idea that you don't have to be scared of it necessarily, but
knowledge is power.
Exactly. Know how, be capable. And so the book started as simply, well, should we step back on what the book really started to be about? Because this was, I guess, this was a hard one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was hard. we're both kind of pausing here because David and I had this editing, experience, situation, shall we call it, right here locally, because I live in Jeff and he came over a couple of years ago, and when you were working on it, and we were hammering it out on my back porch, and I really thought you were going to walk away.
Do you remember that? That was amazing.
So let me tell the people who are listening, it is, picture books are not easy.
Yes. Working on a book about fire, it could have gone, and it started off being very broad, mm-hmm. And ambitious. Mm-hmm. It was a campfire that started at the beginning of time, mm-hmm. yeah. and it was going to affect all of civilization. It was, I had big ideas.
Yeah.
And in a way, it sort of didn't connect. Mm-hmm. And with your guidance, we figured out how to make it feel more of a human story rather than a mm-hmm. conceptual story, mm-hmm. which is where I was going. I thought, it was good in some ways, but it didn't have heart,
yeah.
I think. And I was grappling with how to get that in. And you're right. I was sitting there at your picnic table and I was like, I don't know how to solve this.
But we got through it. We got through it. I don't remember all the specifics, but... But I think, I will be honest, even, yes, I had edited for a long time, but I really didn't know how it was going to turn out either. But we got there. I'd love for you to read, can you read a couple pages of the book itself?
Sure. Yeah.
Great. Let's start at the beginning, and I think I marked where you should yep. finish up.
It starts really simply, actually, and it's a father and a daughter who are creating a campfire together. And it simply starts... Gather rocks. Rocks all around. Let's make a fire before the sun goes down. Gather tinder bit by bit. Birch bark, pine cones, dry stuff, twigs. Don't forget your marshmallow stick. What comes next? Crisscross sticks. Make a nest for a fiery phoenix. Is that a bird? A magic one. Wait and watch. You might see one. Crackle, crinkle, sizzle, pop. Listen. Hear the fire talk? Colors flicker, warm and mellow. Red, orange, purple, yellow.
That's so beautiful. And you are going to be reading this and just answering some questions and answers. Where you can give the information?
At Avati Books in Jeffersonville. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful new and incredibly curated, I got to say, fantastic collection of picture books.
Yeah.
And we'll be there on Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning. And we'll read the book and we'll... talk about how maybe books are made, but also we might even sing the song, perhaps.
Yeah. And I hope to make a guest appearance there as well.
Please
David,
do.
David, thank you so much for coming to WJFF and talking to me. I really appreciate it. This is David Koval, and his new book out is Gather Around.
Thanks, Tracy.
And wonderful. Speaking to Tracy Gates, our contributor here. And David, can you tell folks where they can get more information quickly about your books?
Oh, my. I guess everywhere online, but Dave, also please...
Your
please,
website?
Oh, my website. Oh, that's what you mean.
This is the part where you give the plug on your website.
I know. Okay, davidkovalbooks.com, but I have to update my site, so,
Instagram.
Also, Pandren Random House, I think you can find stuff,
right.
too.
Thank you guys for coming in. This was great. It was kind of being in the whole process of the picture book publishing. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right, that's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Furniture Restore, located on Main Street in Jeffersonville, specializing in antique and vintage furniture, rugs, art, and lighting, because buying well-made and pre-owned is a better choice for the planet. Winter hours online at therestorejville.com. And from The River Reporter, the community newspaper serving four counties along the Delaware River in Pennsylvania and New York, riverreporter.com. And from listeners like you.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll remember Henry Mancini.
born 100 years ago and composer of many classic tunes for TV and movies. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233 AH Monticello. Streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. There are fire weather concerns across central New York today due to dry conditions and gusty winds. The humidity values might drop as low as 20% in some areas. A reminder that the statewide burn ban is in effect until May 14th. It's 11 o'clock.